Welcome to the Dreamcatcher Podcast, a place where you'll receive a boost of inspiration, practical advice, and tools to maximize your success and personal happiness. And that's not all. You'll also get plenty of guidance on how you can use your gifts, talents, and compassion to contribute towards making the world a better place. Be sure to sign up for our free weekly newsletter for a preview of what's in store and to also receive a free ebook. To sign up, simply visit www.thedreamcatch.com. Now it's my pleasure to introduce you to the host of the Dreamcatcher Podcast, Celine Chinoy.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Dreamcatcher Podcast, a place where your dreams can find a voice. All of us want to find true love that lasts for a lifetime. But the journey to finding the right person is anything but simple, especially in the world of modern dating, where it's so easy to get stuck in unhealthy relationships. But according to Susan Winter, a love coach and my guest today, we all have the power to attract healthy love by simply shifting the way we think and how we approach relationships. Susan is an internationally recognized relationship expert, best-selling author, and a YouTube sensation. She writes, speaks, and coaches on dating issues, relationships, and personal empowerment. Her 750 media credits include The Oprah Show, Cosmo Magazine, CNN, and The Today Show. In our conversation, Susan offers advice and tips on how we can stay away from unhealthy relationships and get over those toxic patterns that prevent us from finding true love. Whether you're single or someone who's just looking to improve your current relationship, you will find value in Susan's words. And if you found this helpful, please don't forget to subscribe, like, share this video. Hey, Susan, how are you?
Hi, Celine. I'm fine. How are you today?
I am doing great. Thank you. I am so excited to be speaking with you again.
We've had some good interviews, haven't we?
We have, yes, but this time on my podcast. So it's just wonderful to speak to you again. As I've told you before, I'm a huge fan of your work, not only because I think you offer some of the most thoughtful and insightful advice, but because of your generosity and empathy, that really comes through in your videos. So yeah, I just thought I'd let you know.
Thank you.
Get started.
Thank you.
Okay. So before we dive into all the relationship talk, I want to know about your personal journey. How did you become a relationship expert? And were there any early experiences that influenced your career choice?
Wow, this is really good. Now, this happened to me. I kind of got bumped into this profession. I did not plan this. This was a late life profession. I had actually retired pretty much. Mm-hmm. Late 30s, early 40s. I'd made my money in corporate, and I was on my way out. I'd been a spokeswoman. I built a home and a golf course in northwestern New Jersey, away from all the crime. It was very, very bad at the time in New York. And just went out there, and it was supposed to be a weekend home, and it turned out to be a full-time home. Gave up my apartment in the city, and that's where I met a much, much younger man. And that undid all the people living around me. And then it became their great pleasure to do nothing but tear us down for the next 7 years. And so that gave me an inside look as to the hostility and resentment of having a love model that's completely different than anybody else's. And it made me very much understand what it must have been like to be gay years ago when you couldn't be out, to be hidden, and to have all these horrible things said about you, or interracial couples. And so a friend just off the top of her head said, oh, well, let's write a book. So I put pen to paper and started writing all that I had endured there, which, you know, if I told you, it wouldn't make a great movie. It's the kind of stuff like, you know, when you hear people say you can't make this stuff up,
yeah.
Real life, the real life stuff that people did was so extraordinary that I can't even believe. I felt like I was dropped into the middle of like a Black Mirror episode, or Twilight Zone. It was just so strange. But that gave me the momentum to use the book that got published and then became an international bestseller. This is pre-Cougar. So it was the first, it was the first of its
kind. What's the name of the book?
Older Women, Younger Men, New Options for Love and Romance. As a matter of fact, it is going out of publication this year. The rights revert to me, which is cool. You know, there was always bad distribution on it, but it was considered the Bible for women who happened to be in love with somebody at least 10 years younger. And the thing, here's the hypocrisy. Nobody in my community, including my boyfriend's family, we live together, would have had any problem with me being in love with him and he in love with me. They wouldn't have had a problem if it were a casual fling. But the fact that it was a meaningful, loving relationship was an issue. And I really had an issue with that. You know, I didn't, you know, you see lots of young women being taken advantage of for their naivete. And mm-hmm. The same is true with young men. Young men start with an open heart, you know, and the first love of their life can really scar them. So we have a responsibility if we are entering a young man's life to do the right thing and be a good example of what it's like to be a woman in right order. And, you know, that it was just, I hit so much press and so much fanfare for never having had a press agent. I've just got reams and reams and reams of press, which is always very interesting to me. And it's a great outlet. So it was the Today Show that gave me the banner of relationship expert in the Chiron. I'd never, you know, I remembered looking at the replay going, oh, I guess. Okay. All right. And it wasn't really a thing. We had therapists, but we didn't have people doing this so much. And so it was kind of a new field at the time.
Yeah. And I have to say that it seems like it comes naturally to you. It's like almost like a stream of consciousness. It's like, it's obvious for you when it's not for others listening, but for you, it seems like very natural.
I think working on camera and speaking is natural to me. I came from opera, which is why I came to New York. And then I worked in financial news and I was a corporate spokeswoman for almost half of the Fortune 500 companies. And I would get into text. Oh my God, Celine, I didn't know. I mean, I got into really dense technical text and I didn't know what I was talking about. I remember the first time that they told me to move the mouse across the table. Nobody had personal computers. I thought they wanted me to animal wrangle. I'm like, I'm not working with animals. What is this? What's a mouse? I'm not holding a mouse. It's like, I didn't know what it was. No, but we had really complicated scripts to learn it. You know, I think I just got really comfortable. And then I was passionate. I think what made that book a bestseller, one, it was the first, and two, other people had written about it, but I think I had the media down so I could express myself. And
I understand as a journalist, I get it.
and I never knew I could write. And that's the funny thing. You're a journalist, you know, normally people go to school for this and I had just been passed through every English class. And so I never really studied. They'd kind of have me write something and then they'd pass me and I didn't have to go back to class. And so I didn't really know how to write, except I heard it in my head. And so then I started writing a lot and I still wasn't in this field. I eventually started helping people via email all over the world. Didn't charge for it. I didn't charge for another 15 years, I think. And then I started to say, wow, this is a lot of time stuck on a computer. I'm exhausted. And then I thought, you know, I really need either money or recognition or something. And somebody said, well, why do they have to be separate? Can't you have both? I'm like, oh, really? Oh, but I'm not a therapist. How dare I charge? Because I always thought, you know, nobody has a right. This is just an opinion. I'm not a scientist. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a clinician. So I underpriced myself. I still am underpriced, but I kept thinking it's an opinion, you know, but I'm glad that you and other people feel that it's helpful. I get that a lot. And if common sense and making things clear helps, then that's good, right?
Yeah. And I think what your gift is that you really make complicated situations simplified. You simplify it. And you're very objective about it. And it's hard for people to be that way when it comes to love and relationships.
We're all that way. I get that way. I tell my friends, remember, if I get seeing somebody, I had this wonderful guy, this Australian actor on the phone going, Susan, now I'm going to tell you what you tell me all right now. And he's just telling me what to do in my own situation. So we lose our objectivity. But I have to thank my mother for my ability to express very complex ideology in very simple layman's terms, because my mother never understood me. It's like I was talking a separate language. I had to hunt for ways to explain to her who I was, why I was doing what I was doing, what my values were. She just didn't get it. I wasn't cookie cutter. She couldn't understand it. I had to find very simple analogies, and I had to hunt and hunt and hunt. Then you see the one that clicks and you're like, oh, now they've got it. I do the same with my clients. I keep hunting for different ways to tell them. And I keep, you know, the responsibility is on the healer or the teacher or the trainer. It's not your job to learn my language. It's my job to learn your language, to learn a way to effectively communicate what I need to tell you in a way that you will understand. That is my job. So I never liked those teachers in college that tried to make it, I'm so intelligent and it's so difficult and I doubt that you can understand it because I'm so amazing. And I just thought, God, that's so pompous and isn't the point to learn and you're not helping me learn. Then I heard other teachers that were just like, they told you what they told you. They told you, they reminded you, they told you, they did the bullet points. I'm like, I got it. So yeah, clarity in dating is something we need, right?
Exactly. And I think people like that are insecure, because if they really knew this stuff, they don't really need to be pompous about their knowledge.
It took me years to understand the difference between confidence and power and fear and insecurity and bluster. I used to read people literally. Like if a person like, oh, I have hundreds of boyfriends. I'm like, oh, she has hundreds of boyfriends. I mean, you know, I grew up in Minnesota. It's like, oh, that must be true. Okay. And so, yeah, so it took me a while to realize what people were compensating for. A human nature is really interesting. So if you want to be a good relationship expert, just really get good at human nature. Understand yourself, then you'll understand other people.
Yeah. Definitely. And you certainly help us do that. So let's start by talking about the difference between healthy and unhealthy love. A lot of people struggle with this. So please break it down for us, Susan.
It's hard. It's hard sometimes when the only template you've ever had is already a little murky. Healthy love doesn't hurt all the time. Healthy love makes you feel safe, makes you feel secure. You're not walking on eggshells. You trust that your partner is there for you and you are there for your partner. And yes, you will have challenges. In healthy love, you will have arguments. In healthy love, you will have fights. But they get resolved and you find your way back to each other. Mm-hmm. In unhealthy love, you're always terrified that you're losing them, that you're being punished by them, that you're not good enough, that they're looking at somebody else. In unhealthy love, you are always queasy, nervous, concerned, on edge, insecure, and you'll have a moment of security. And it's kind of like you finally get them back into the right place. It's like you just start to exhale, and then they pull the rug out from underneath you again. It, like innately, they sense when you've relaxed, and then they just want to throw you off. Unhealthy love is not knowing where you stand and seeking their approval instead of seeking your own approval.
Yeah, I love it. And don't you think romantic movies and songs are partly to blame because they romanticize that feeling of longing and just messed up love?
I know, something I've seen in so many movies that drives me crazy, but it's true in real life. You've got two people that obviously care for each other, but they hide it. They hide it. And they don't admit it, or they deflect. And then you see all the pain they go through because they lost them. They're like, go away, go date somebody else. I'm not right for you. And then you see them agonizing over the fact that they're getting married. Now they've got to run to the altar and say, I didn't mean it. And it's so much like real life. And it always irritates me. I'm like, but they wouldn't have a movie. They wouldn't have four segments, you know? Mm-hmm. So I get irritated because it's just so much easier to just cut to the chase and figure out what the resolution is. I like you. Oh, you don't like me. Oh, okay. Thanks. I like you. Oh, you do like me. Great. Let's continue to proceed. I just counseled somebody who hates being vulnerable. And this, I'm drawing a blank. I work with so many people. I think this was a friend. Yeah. Oh yeah. This was a friend. And I said, for once in your life, can you just say, look, I really liked you. I'm sorry it didn't turn out. I know you've got to go explore this other person. Just so we're being honest, I wish you would have picked me. That way, this guy never has any doubts. She liked me. She made an effort. I chose to walk away from it.
But that's hard to do, Susan.
Yes, it is.
No one wants to feel rejected.
She was already rejected. He had written that he had to go explore somebody else. And I said, this is where you really have to. If he didn't know you liked him before, you got to say it clearly now. Stop saying it indirectly. Say it as let me be very clear. For clarity's sake, I like
you. And he was single, the guy. The
other guy. Yeah. And it's not even a thing. I'm convinced he's madly in love with her. He's just getting in his own way. But in the meantime, as my friend, I have to encourage her. The remedy is the same. You have to move forward. You can't wait. Even if you know somebody loves you and they're diddling around, you cannot stop and wait for them. The only way they're going to catch up to you is if you start moving. You know, we can't go backwards and sit down with them and wait. And so it's more excruciating for her. She has to move forward. Either way, whether he's going to step up or he's not, she's got to move forward.
And in her case, it was just telling him that.
I knew her history, that she always deflected, and that she's really come so far because she used to be pining over a guy for a year that she never kissed and gone out with. And they were doing this back and forth dance. And it's just like, just men are stupid sometimes too. Just like we are. They're like, I like you. You have to sometimes just say it as simply as that. I really like you. I'd love to go out with you. Love to see you. Mm-hmm. I think you're a real cool person. Everybody's scared, you know.
They really are. I guess maybe they just don't want to face reality, you know, if their love is not reciprocated. So,
well, it's like, how would you rather die? Would you rather have your neck hacked off over a period of a year, just like that? So I think a clean cut, like if it's, I like resolution and I'm very impatient.
Yeah.
I can't believe the patience some of my clients have had, like, man, I wouldn't have let it go 30 seconds. You went 3 weeks without. I'm so proud of you. Good for you. I mean, I don't have the courage to play it that way. I'm just like way too impatient. Like, in or out, let's go. Let's go. I'm busy. Let's go.
I think a part of them likes to perpetuate the fantasy of the possibility, you know,
yes. Rather
than just.
They don't want to know the answer, right? You kind of figure it's a no, but you get to stay in the blissful. Maybe there's something going on. It's kind of a charge. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. Well, this is a good.
Well, it is good until it becomes mentally draining. And if it becomes mentally draining, then you have to jump to the resolution and get out, right? Get in or get out.
Get in or get out. Yeah. Which leads me to my next question. Like, what if someone is stuck in toxic relationship patterns? Like, what can they do to break the cycle?
Toxic relationships are really insidious. You can not know. Well, the first key is recognizing the pattern, recognizing that you're in one. And remember, people that have never experienced a healthy love model in growing up or with their caregivers are going to have a very hard time knowing if they're in something healthy or unhealthy. They'll have to rely upon what their friends tell them, right? So one is to recognize that it's unhealthy. And how do you do that? By checking in with how you feel in your gut. Do you feel safe? Do you feel good? Does this person support you? You know, at least 65 to 70% of the time, are you all good? And then you have your little things. I mean, I'd like it to be 75%, but, you know, maybe that's asking too much in today's world. I think you just have to keep coming back. Having a dispute is not a problem. Getting to resolution is the issue we want to do. If you have a person with a strong personality, you may butt heads. That's okay. Can you keep moving forward? Are they not going to beat you up over your opinion or punish you because you think differently? So toxic relationships, unhealthy relationships, by their nature, are deeply psychological and weave into our historical patterns. And a good narcissist will know exactly how to get in there and make their own spider web that kind of hooks you.
Oh, yeah.
and so there's, right? Okay. Oh, so you had some experience, right?
I did. Yes. I was with a narcissist. So, yeah.
And how did you disentangle that?
I had to work on my self-esteem and just come to this point where I felt I deserve better. Yeah. But that was a process. It didn't happen overnight.
So you had to recognize it first. Recognize it doesn't feel right. Follow the thread back to how do I fix this? Try to fix it, right? Did you speak up finally and start to communicate discontent? Like a lot of people are afraid to communicate discontent. And I think it just depends on the language and how you do it. But, it really hurt me when this and this happened. I think you're a good person. I'm just trying to figure this out. You know, can we talk about this? Maybe I want something. This is what I'd like. I'd like blah, 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 blah. Really hope that you feel the same way. That kind of stuff.
But Susan, if you're dealing with a narcissist, they won't be able to meet you at that level because, so it's how do you communicate your feelings to them in a way that they'd understand because you would just keep hitting a wall. So
with a narcissist, once you realize you're with a narcissist, basically it's game over. You can't do anything. You can't. Your love is not going to heal them. Oh, they had a rough childhood. They don't mean to. They're getting over their last relationship.
I could fix him or her.
What'd you say?
I could fix him or her.
Oh, yes. That's a great one. Yeah. That's a great one. I can fix them. I can heal them. My love will fix them. Yeah, once you realize you've got that, you've got to bite the bullet and get out because there's no changing it. And you can be very blunt and say, look, you're narcissistic. You play mind games with me. You gaslight me. You make me feel unsafe. You're never consistent. I need consistent. If you can do consistent, great. If you can't do consistent, I must evacuate. And that probably means blocking you from every aspect of my life. So get clear on that. So, I mean, you've just got to be that brutal. I don't know how you did it, and I don't know how much you want to go into today.
No, it's a long story. So
there's a gap. So there's a gap. So you've got the recognition I'm in something that's not good for me. That's the first
thing. Yeah.
And it's trying every combination. That's a square peg in the round hole. That's the next thing. Sometimes you get lucky and the relationship gets better. Other times you keep trying. When exhaustion sets in and you have left no stone unturned, and you get a no, this isn't going to work, I'm not happy, then it's obvious. There is no other choice. You have explored everything. You must leave.
Yeah.
And people are terrified to leave. They're terrified to leave something they hate just because they have something, right?
Pretty much, yeah. And especially if you're someone who's stubborn and who's really a go-getter. And it's tougher to get out of bad situations, bad relationships.
Oh, because you didn't win. Because yeah, you should.
Exactly.
My girlfriend keyed me in on that. She was dating a guy who had a couple other women in the bin. If he wasn't around one weekend, he'd be out with one of them. And I said, how do you, I'm way too selfish. How do you do this? And she said, I'm going to win. I want to win. I'm like, God, at what price, I mean, if it's thrilling and your self-esteem is high and it's really just like rolling the dice at Las Vegas and you can afford to lose, great. But I mean,
emotions are at stake, then it's a high price to pay, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, you nailed it. Yeah.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. Totally agree. So what do you think about situationships and just relationships that are complicated? Because those are so common nowadays.
They're undefined. Everybody's afraid.
Undefined. I mean, maybe someone you're in a love triangle or you've been dating forever, but there's no titles yet. And what are your thoughts on that, on that trend?
I have an alternative and I've been talking about it. And I've been teaching it and I've been presenting it worldwide. I presented the Love a la Carte method to the International Mental Health Festival because that was my opportunity to really speak to every clinician in the world that was signed up for this event. And we broke the record of the attendance to my event because in the first couple hours, we'd already had 150 people sign up. And this is something that, like, they don't get that kind of attendance. It's like really psychological stuff. It's like, oh, who's going to watch that, right? So I fully believe that people have less of an issue with commitment. They have a greater issue mentally with feeling hemmed in and trapped. And while we might think, well, wait, they're the same, I'm going to say no. Oftentimes, I fully believe that we have a structural problem. And I have believed this for over 20 years when I was trying to present this material in proposals and no publisher wanted it. They wanted me, they didn't want this information. So I sat on it, 20 years sat on it. And now I think everybody's ready to hear it, is that when you wonder why the relationships don't work anymore, people don't want to crawl into a box of a defined, you know, role, which we don't have to use those roles, but we have to do what I call a la carte. You have to start with the basic infrastructure. If partnership, two people, is the hallmark and it is monogamy, you start there and begin negotiating on what aspects you know you can do and what you can't do. And the relationships are formed more on a series of agreements as to who we will be to each other, and we design the rules ourselves. I think if people had this kind of forethought, they would not be hesitant to step into a relationship because, after all, they're defining how the rules are. And there are lots of upfront agreements. But if you're walking into something with the expectation that we're going to be together and you're responsible to be good to me and my emotional feelings, this is why we've got people jumping ship. Because they're like, oh, no, no, I want a date. I don't even need a relationship to have sex, so why should I bother? And, oh, you know, it's always good in the beginning, then I get bored. And so you've got a lot of people doing avoiding and just treading water, seeing you sexually, but you don't know what you've got, and not ever allowing you to define the relationship. So at that point, I start negotiating. I negotiate what I want, and I try and figure out what they can do and see if they match.
So kind of like a contract.
Yeah, it's like a verbal contract. It can be a written contract if you like. I mean, they've been doing written contracts for living together in Northern European countries for decades.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They're pretty fluid in their relationships, right? In Scandinavia.
They are. But if you're living together, you know, you can't have some deadbeat just lying on the couch. If you're having children together, you can't just have somebody that's like, oh, that was fun. Goodbye. So, I mean, there's a lot of risk. You know, you can have freedom, but with freedom, you also need responsibility.
Yeah.
So it's not freedom from responsibility. We should have freedoms within the relationship, but they're agreed upon. Our responsibility is to stay to the agreements that we've created in the relationship, or we have a fundamental problem. So I think I really have asked a lot of people to go back over their relationship model. And instead of just give me what you think you're supposed to have, because that's what everybody has, really, I've learned so much from walking people through this process. I have a gal tomorrow, and I know, and I've counseled her before, so I kind of know what she's calling for. She's going to try and figure out if she can't make something work with a guy that's not going to give her exactly what she wants. And so we have to find the truth in that. You know, is there a way for her to get joy in something that doesn't look like a traditional relationship? And she's got to be honest with herself, but we got to figure out what it is she really needs. And then I try and craft a way to get there. So relationships are changing. In all this chaos, there is a bit of truth. People at least aren't doing what they don't want to do anymore, which I would hope would lower the divorce rate. I mean, if people start to be honest as to what they can and cannot do, and create relationships according to knowing who they are and what they want to do, and kind of talk about that with their partner, you're going to get people more in alignment with each other, other than just gritting their teeth and bearing it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so not everybody should be in a traditional relationship. Not everybody's got the, you know, desire for that or ability.
That's interesting. I think that's a really for a lot of people to hear.
Yeah, but you can have commitment. You just have to. I think everybody gets scared about being trapped for a lifetime. I know I always
have. I think so, yeah.
It's like, I don't want to endure a lifetime when there are so many other options, plus one that I really like is being by myself. So if I don't like this, I don't want to beg a lawyer to release me, pay for his part, probably have to pay him to represent you too, and get the heck out. I don't want that. If it doesn't work out, I'd like to leave. Now remember, I don't have children. If I had children and I wanted children, I'd be with a whole different design. I'd go back to square one, traditional. Nope, we're going to sign this. This is a legal agreement. Yep, this is what it is. So, but even in that, you can have a very modern marriage.
Right, right.
That you tailor to yourself. Then where growth is factored into it. And you've actually gone over what that would look like.
But where, at what point would you be crossing the line? Because there's so many shades of gray here. I mean, at some point, some ethics and morality like that could come into question.
Give me an example.
No, I don't know. For instance, if you're someone's mistress.
And well, you're talking about a relationship where not every partner knows the truth of the other people involved, right?
I think so. I know that in some parts of the world, it's kind of, you're allowed to have...
Right. Like a French prime minister going for some coronation and behind his car with his wife as the mistress. Like, yeah, it's kind of accepted there. But...
I mean, recently in Thailand, I heard about... the king, his mistress had gone into hiding because his queen didn't like her, didn't approve of her. And then she came back and he embraced her, and it's caused a lot of controversy with the Thai people. I mean, that's just what came to mind. And I'm just like,
well, those are political marriages. You're lucky if love occurs inside them, but pretty much a political marriage, like a royal marriage, is one. Listen, 200 years ago and back, 300 years ago, all marriage was this way. It wasn't based on love. This whole love concept is very different. It was always about aligning families and power bases and structure and survival. It's only been in the last, you know, couple hundred years that we've wanted it to be romantic as well. And we keep adding more requirements and expectations onto our partner, no matter they fail us. And by the way, ladies, men are not telepathic. Just because he loves you doesn't mean he knows what you're thinking. I've written this over and over and over again. And I work with men and women, which is great. I've never limited my practice. You know, I don't know what I'm getting when I pick up the phone. Got no idea. There's no pre-screening. You've got the money. I talk to you. We figure it out as we go, and love it. I never know what's coming my way. But I think in this, the most important thing anybody could do is figure out, as you said, the top of our conversation, to know what you want. First, know what you want and be able to explain it in words that are understandable to anybody in a room, like words that they know, like I want a relationship, or I'm looking for a boyfriend, or I'm looking for a wife. And then if you have some kind of alternative version of that, like the subtitle, then that you would want to include that. Somebody who's actually going to be a business partner. I'm looking for a co-creative partnership, somebody who would be like a business mate, and we have this thing together, whatever your dream is, or however it's different. But I don't believe in monogamy. I want a primary, but I'm not going to be monogamous, whatever your thing is. And once you can state that, you will gain a lot of people, you will lose a lot of people. And I think it's just that by being vague, everybody comes to the audition. By being very specific, we get fewer people, right? And for whatever reason, rather than thinking, oh, in the end, I'd rather cast the person who's right, we're just like, oh, let's see how many people show up. That'll make me feel good about myself. But that's where we get into a bit of a mess, right?
Sure. Yeah. So be specific and be clear about
it. I think so, at least in your head. Yeah. We will get, you know, we may find ourselves being attracted to things we're trying to stay away from. Mm-hmm. Because they look good, or we've got a template for them, or we like the bad boys, or we're looking for a certain kind of woman. You know, I can't tell you how many of my male clients have just lost their mind over beauty. Just
oh, yeah. Yeah. Beauty. Even my male friends, like I've seen that.
Yeah. Mesmerized. So knowing what we want and then refining that as we go along, because it is a living fluid design that we have to keep kind of updating. Right. I catch myself, and I share this in interviews, looking at certain kinds of guys. I'm like, Susan, no, you're right. Think of where you are in life right now.
Yeah.
10 years ago, even then it was, yeah, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So what are those warning signs that we need to look out for when we're in the dating circuit? Like, is there any telltale signs that we should be looking for, you know, that could just give us an idea about what kind of partner they would be?
I'd like to watch their ethics and see what they say. Now, we have to understand that what they tell you may be completely false, but we have to start somewhere. You have to trust a little bit in order to get into the relationship or get into a dating scene at all. And I think to ask them about certain situations, or you bring up certain topics and see how they respond, or they may volunteer a certain position. Basically, if you find a person of good character, good human values, you're like 90% good if they like you and they're attracted to you. I mean, it just eliminates so many problems. Finding not just the person that's visually exciting, because that's easy, and then we try and jam all the qualities we want on the inside, and then we're so frustrated that they don't match. Like, why aren't you being nice? But I have you, like, you're supposed to be nice and adore me. So, know what you want. Be very clear about it. And check to make sure that, as best you can tell, they're a fine human being. And watch how they treat others. You know, on initial dates, how do they treat the server staff? How do they speak about their coworkers? How do they speak about their exes? Be very mindful of somebody that's got a million problems with everybody. They're just victimized by life, and this guy's no good, and my boss, and I'm not getting ahead, and oh, you know, it's the government, and it's the this, and it's the that, and that's my ex-wife, and that's a problem. And you're going to be the next problem they have that they're sharing, you know, over a coffee or a drink, right?
Sure, sure. So because there's so much information out there about what the ideal partner should be like, and just a lot of dating advice, a lot of dating tips of what guys are looking for, what girls are looking for, people tend to emulate those and they can pretend to be the perfect partner. I've heard this happen several times with my girlfriends, when guys pretend to be this ideal partner. Like, how do you see through that?
How long, on average, when you hear these stories, this is great information, great data. How long, on average, does it take for them to play their hand until they fail? Like, do the women know in 3 months, 2 weeks, 3 weeks? Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
How long does it take for the gals to figure out, oh, there's a disconnect here? He's not what he means to be.
Well, I think it varies. It really does, depending on how clued in they are and how observant they are and how objective they can stay. Because in the initial stages of dating, you're just, you know, you're in love and you're just, you know, you can't be practical about it.
And we can't hate ourselves for that. It's part of the design. That love blindness that we have, that's the hook to get us in. Yeah. You know, it's like when you're making a baby, you're not thinking, oh God, they're going to be taking drugs and, you know, like ruining the car and getting into crashes and like hundreds of thousands of dollars of college expenses I have to pay. You're not thinking about that. You're thinking about the joy of the child. Mm-hmm. Same thing is true. We kind of go mentally dead when we see somebody we like and we enter that happy place. So enjoy it for as long as it lasts. Mm-hmm. We have to kind of go there. Sometimes it is true. Sometimes what you're seeing, they are too good to be true. And so we are looking for consistency, not occasional grand gestures, but a consistent performance of interest and working with us. Excuse me. We want somebody who really wants to be with us and cares enough to work things out with us, you know, if we have an issue.
Okay, so you got a sense that empathy and that genuine, those genuine feelings, basically.
We will know, because in the beginning of relationships, before you have established exclusivity or coupledom, you're always on edge. You're on edge and hoping for the best, but looking like a hawk at everything that's going on. And that's when we start ignoring the red flags, because we don't want to see them, but we remember that they were there later on. So sometimes it's a combination of being instinctive, intuitive, and trusting what we see. And when something doesn't make sense, even though we so desperately want them to be okay, sometimes we have to really look at that. Mm-hmm. And if there's something we don't understand, we need to ask directly. I'm sorry, I thought you said you were divorced just like 2 years ago. Now, it's last couple months ago. I just, help me understand that. Or I'm concerned about this or that. I'm a little confused. And see what they say. You catch them in lies. You know, we all try and put our best foot forward.
Mm-hmm. So call it out if you see any kind of red
flag. If you're concerned and you don't know, ask. And okay. Then ask yourself, am I satisfied with the answer? Or did I feel like they were a little sketchy when they were telling me this stuff?
Oh, yeah. It's also the way they say it, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And did you feel like they were blowing you off, or did you think it was a rehearsed answer? Yeah. Remember, people get very good at what they do over and over again. And many guys and many women are great at this seduction. They don't know how to keep you in a relationship. They just know hot and cold makes you keep coming back. And the worse they treat you, the more you like them. And this has been a known method for them. So there are a lot of people playing at love. You need to get very clear on the people that look like they're ready, willing, and able to be in love with a skill set that matches yours.
Wow. Susan, where do we love this skill set? Your videos is a good place to start.
Well, you know, to have enough information, if you know yourself, that's number one.
Yeah.
And then you will start to readily, you'll know you're making some progress if you start to pass on things that you might have allowed before. And I don't mean that you're getting pickier, because we did a great video interview on being too picky.
Yes, we
did. It's not that you should be too picky. It's just that, you know, you've got to get it right. And if you can't work with that person and they're not working with you, mm-hmm. and you're not getting it right, and you've tried and tried, then maybe it's just not the right match for you.
Sure.
But know what you want and see if you can work with the person. Are they willing to work with you? Are they interested in working with you? Are they interested in getting it right?
Yeah.
Or do they care that much? Yeah. And if you complain, are they like, oh, whatever? And then they push you back a little bit because they're going to punish you with a timeout and date somebody else because you're giving them a little bit of a hassle. Yeah. You don't want that.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely not. Susan, we could talk about this all day, but I think we should end the conversation here just to respect your time. Thank you for all this great advice you've given us. And I'm sure everyone who's listening to this is just going to find it so valuable. And of course, if they want more, they can visit your website, right? SusanWinter.net. SusanWinter.net. And anything else you'd like to add?
My YouTube channel is Susan Winter. You can just put in Susan Winter in the search bar. It should be the first of all things that come up. Very happy about that. I didn't pay for that. It's just like a lot of press in a lot of years. So I'm very happy about that. And I have to tell you, I've read some of your articles. They're beautifully written.
Oh, thank you.
We met in the video interview. So I've actually read some things in your blog and I'm like, wow, what a great writer. So just, you know, commendations on that. I think it's beautiful.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Great. Susan, thanks again for being here and everything that you do. And I hope you have a wonderful day.
Thank you, Celine.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for tuning in. If you enjoyed what you just heard, please subscribe to my podcast and feel free to share it with your friends and family. Take care and speak soon.